They wouldn't tell me what it was. Now I know why. Yeah, my name's Rod. That's my music. I'm gonna talk to you about a word. It's acedia. Have you ever heard this word? Excellent. So that's one thing you can learn. I'm gonna tell you why you need to know about it for a little while. Then I'm gonna talk about the Bible for a bit, and then that's not that I'm throwing away the Bible, but it's all on my little thing. And then I'm gonna try to get practical about how you can do something with what I'm saying. So, and you'll get a chance to talk back too. So maybe you'll add what I'm missing. Let's see if my slide goes up. That's Kathleen Norris. And you may not have heard about her, but if you ever run across a book by her, you might want to pick it up. She's got an interesting history as a Christian, because she's not one of those. When you read her, she's just like a normal person, and you realize that she's had problems. And one of her problems was that even though she grew up in the church where they kind of said if you're a Christian, everything will be better. She wasn't exactly better, and she spent years just having trouble, like getting out of bed in the morning and trying to pick herself up. She was kind of in a depression mode, like some of you are most of the time, and it was hard to kind of be perky, happy, that kind of music Christian, you know, that she couldn't do it. So she recognized when she got a little older, she's kind of an intellectual, but when she was studying something in the library, she ran across this word acedia. Because she was studying old school Christians, and they were quite familiar with her syndrome. And if you ever get bored with praying, you might want to read her book, Acedia and Me, because the kind of boredom that she knows about and that she experienced is pretty common in our era. What she discovered when she was reading this early Christian text, when she's about her in her 30s, that it was talking about this soul weariness that she had experienced since she was a teenager. And when she was taught the word, she immediately recognized it described her affliction, which was sinking into a state where you're just unable to care. Some of you are already nodding your head. You know what this is like. She was sinking into a state where she was just unable to care. She couldn't do it. So her book, it's a story about her and her husband's bouts with acedia, and you might say it's clinical cousin depression. So she talks about herself, and she also shows how it's this great infection of modern life. This is how she describes it. Oh, it's so low, I'm sorry. I didn't realize my building is kind of tall, so that would be up in the sky. But so I should have put it on the top, but I'll read it to you. She says that acedia is restless boredom. Seems like it's an oxymoron, but you know what I mean. You probably feel it. Frantic escapism. Commitment phobia. It's the enervating despair that we struggle with today. It's the ancient demon of acedia in modern dress. So she speaks to the antidote of sinking into this cynical kind of despair, this kind of a drunken whatever, this kind of resistance to slavery by being nothing. You know, you don't want to be a slave, so I'll just be nothing. It's kind of acedia. Her antidote is, you know, well, of course, develop a meaningful life. Have something else that's motivating you and work on it and activate it. And she says that prayer, of course, is the key to that. And I want to talk about prayer because most of us don't pray because we have acedia. And when we get into prayer, it's so boring, and it's so nothing, and just makes us feel more like we're nothing than like we're getting anything, and we don't do it. But it's the antidote to feeling that way. But it tends to make us feel that way, so we don't do it, and so we're on this cycle. And say, well, why am I a Christian? I forgot. You know, I don't know why this is, and I'm going to go to church now, and Rod's going to get all perky on me, and I'm going to supposed to be doing something really great, and I won't, and then I'll feel like, oh my gosh, I'm a bad person, and I shouldn't go to church, and then I don't, and then I feel worse, and then I have this enervating despair, and I say I should get saved, but I don't want to get saved because then I'd have to go do that thing. You know, and so that's what she's talking about. You know, this kind of syndrome that we tend to get into, and Mark Zuckerberg is the evangelist of it. Have you seen this, the new commercials for Facebook Home by any chance? Thank God you don't watch TV. Okay, but the they're out there and they're on Facebook. That's where I saw them. But the it's fascinating because he's talking to people who basically have acedia, and he's figuring out, he's helping you how to distract yourself more, so you'll be even less capable of being an actual person, and you will have to get even more distraction from Facebook and whatever, so that you can maintain your usual sense of distraction, so that you won't actually have to deal with your soul weariness and your daily slavery. So I have a little example of on it's a commercial, so it only takes a minute. But watch this poor girl, watch her poor family, as she's using this new product that Zuckerberg wants you to adopt in the middle of the family dinner. And maybe if you can think of it, picture yourself as this poor, boring, very, very boring aunt or whoever it is who she's trying to not listen to. Now, when I first saw that, I thought, "Is this The Onion? Am I watching the right thing?" I thought it was so funny that but I said, "No, they're serious about this." And there's a lot more of them too, where they're trying to help us do that. I mean, I would just go ahead and judge them mercilessly, except that I actually do this. You know, I know exactly what they're talking about because I get out the phone, and when I'm in a boring situation, I totally do that, and I go distract myself with something that's much more. More interesting. So that enervating despair over having to listen to someone talk about their old dogs, about whom they're probably afraid of losing, you know, who probably is related to your mother in some way, in your own family, you know, not being able to participate in your own family dinner, is what, you know, I'm talking about. I'm going to keep talking about it so you finally get it, because this is a little hard to understand, really, even though I think a lot of us experience this. It's the acedia is the bane of prayers, especially big-time prayers, like hermits. Have you ever heard of a hermit? Not like Herman's Hermits back from the 60s, but like people who go off and stay in the wilderness in their hermitage so that they can pray and be alone with God, like forever. And to gain this oneness with God. Acedia is what hermits in particular experience when they are really into praying. If you're not into praying, you may not have ever experienced this because you don't pray, and so it wouldn't bother you. But if you ever get to this place where you want to be something else but your normal spiritual existence, you might run into acedia. The psychologists, of course, have just folded it into depression, but there's a distinction. It's not just something you take a pill for. I mean, if you have clinical depression, then this won't be exactly about you, and you might need to take a pill and go into talk therapy for however long it takes. And so don't let me dissuade you from that. But this is a spiritual kind of disease or a syndrome that is something that we might all experience in one way or the other. So some people would have a kind of an acute sense of guilt if they were actually bored while they were praying. And so I may have already made you feel guilty because you do get bored when you pray. And I'm not trying to make you feel bad about that, like you should just pray harder or pray better. I'm saying, no, that's a real thing. If you're bored while you pray, let's pay attention to that and not just deny it and say, I shouldn't be doing that. Let's actually be bored and figure out how we go through this so we might have a deeper relationship with God after we've figured out what we're actually working with. because this is more like a moral failing than just a psychological condition. The desert fathers and mothers, Joshua talks about these people all the time, right? He does to me. And so they were the first people to kind of distill this idea, because they're out in the desert trying to make it work all the time. But they found out that merely just staying occupied and denying it didn't really work. They had to work through something more than that. They couldn't just Facebook it and get over it. They had to work on something that was inside, because it wasn't just coming from the outside, and they couldn't deal with it with things that were outside, because it's a heart condition. It's the kind of impulse to just go ahead and die. It's that impulse in us. I'm just going to give up. I'm just going to go ahead and not work so hard. Life is so hard, and living is so hard, I'm not going to really live that hard. You know, you probably feel it here when you get exhorted to get out there and do it. You know, let's get 100 new members or something. You know, let's give a lot of money. Let's do something spectacular. And you say, oh, my God, I have so much to do. And that's just one more thing. And I'm just getting more discouraged when you do that than encouraged. When you re-ramp me up, I go the opposite direction. It's that kind of feeling. I just don't want to do it. I just want to sit. Just leave me alone. I just want to chill out. Would you please chill out so I can chill out? This is just going too, it's too much. I'm just overwhelmed. Because we're overwhelmed with these trivial things that we do all day. And we end up wanting to do nothing and call it leisure, because we're just kind of overwhelmed with all this nonsense. I love babies, so I just have to know who that is. Oh, okay. Dr. Landis. Okay. What was I saying?
Something about leisure.
Excellent. We are on or we're off, and we resent having to be on all the time, and so we just go off, and we call it leisure. That's like acedia. I just want to be off. I don't want to really have my life. I rebel against all this. I kind of sit in the middle of my life like an exhausted toddler, and I just don't want to do it anymore. Have you ever had one of those when you've just overstimulated them to death? And they just finally whack out and just stop. And maybe they even just start screaming, and then they take a nap. You know, and you can have a kind of a life like that. Even as an old guy, you know, you can get accustomed to doing things like that. If you're a philosopher, you might connect it with that the acedia might be like alienation, or like the angst of Kierkegaard or something like that. You ever read all these people? What Sartre might call nausea, or what Camus would call, he was talking about the alienation and the revolt of the existentialists, you know, like they all have the sense of this because the modern era is creating it, and we all got a part of it. So one of the spiritual doctors of acedia was John Cashin. This is him going to visit the desert fathers and mothers back in the day, and He took down all these stories about these people discovering this syndrome. And he tells a story about Abba Moses, who was one of the big-time spiritual directors. And so he was talking to them, and he said that a person came to him and said that he was troubled by listlessness, acedia. And he said so. The guy had said, yesterday I felt greatly troubled, and I was weakened by listlessness, and I was not able to free myself from it until I went to see Abba Paul. And so Abba Moses said, well, and that's when you blew it. I won't read the rest of what he said, but he said, that's when you blew it, because instead of working through the listlessness, you went to see Abba Paul. You got out your handheld, and you did something, rather than actually working through this with God. You got a little bored, you felt something coming upon you, you wouldn't deal with it, you wouldn't face it, so you went and saw Paul, and that's why you're still in this condition, because you never really worked through something. It's the problem of this, and it's really, you distracted yourself rather than face it. So acedia strikes an unhappy mind, and John Cassian said, it begets aversion from the place, boredom with one's cell. They're staying in their little hermitage. It makes you hate your little hermitage, and you want to get out of it. So you have, and then you have scorn and contempt for your brethren. You know, you feel this listlessness, and then you hate everybody else too. I come to Frankfurt and Norris, and it's boring. And we did that, and then Rod is so boring. How long was that speech? How long does this meeting last? It was like an hour and 35 minutes. It's supposed to be an hour and 15 minutes. I lost 20 minutes, you know, and I couldn't take out my phone because then he would have thought I was doing exactly what he told me not to do. But he was so boring, I needed to take out my phone, you know. And then we sang these stupid songs in whatever, Mohawk or something. I hate this place. You know, and we do that. Don't you do that? And I hate you, too, because you don't love me enough. You don't give me enough. You're boring, too. My life is boring. I want to move to Portland, you know. But we do that stuff all the time. That's the syndrome. And we just think, well, this is your free choice. You should just be making choice all the time. If you made more choices, if you just had more experiences, you'd be fine. Well, you just go see Abba Paul, is what Abba Moses would say. You know, that's what you do. That's why you're such a spiritual lightweight, because that's the kind of stuff you do. Sorry, that Abba Moses said, it's right here. I didn't mean to be mean about it. But we've been talking about this for a long time. I know this is just for the really intellectuals that like this, because this is from Dante's Inferno a little. I should just skip this, but I'm going to go ahead. Because he's talking, you ever heard about Dante? You heard about Inferno, of course, because it's abandoned from the 80s. But they're descending into these different parts of hell, and they come apart these different people who are telling what is it like and how they kind of are living out their hell. So they come across these people down here who are fixed in slime, and their heads are kind of poking out of the slime, and they cry out, sullen were we in the sweet air that was gladdened by the sun, carrying lazy smoke within our heart. Which I think is really telling. They didn't like the sun. They were sullen when it was sunny because they had acedia, basically. And what was in their heart was, it wasn't full of gladness, it was full of smoke. They had become smoke, and they've ended up getting slimed. Prayer is the antidote to that kind of stuff, because it makes you actually able to live in your own moment and be glad in your own moment, because you're one with God, who convinces you that it actually is okay to be with you in your part of creation in this present moment, in which he is investing with his own spirit. You know, it's a big promise that comes to us when we're actually practicing our relationship in prayer, so that we're not stuck in a heart, you know, that they're talking like it's full of smoke, you know, like the end of a evening after the bar is closed. You know, and you shut the place up, and it smells like sweat and smoke and, you know, restlessness that didn't come to a fulfillment. It takes some skill to get through acedia. Prayer is like a tool for living that we have to learn how to use. I've been so bad at it for so long, I know a lot about it. But I remember when I was first experiencing this syndrome I'm talking about was when I was in church as a child. I probably said this so often, I used to get dropped off at church. I think my parents were just trying to get rid of me for an hour and a half or so, and they went out and got donuts. They never would talk about Jesus or would darken the church, but it was like free babysitting, so there we go. And so we kind of liked it. I think it was better than being with them, to be honest, but let's not go there. But the Dr. Harms was one of my first pastors, and he used to do this thing called the pastoral prayer. You ever been in church where they do that? Do they still do that anywhere? Where he would do this long prayer for all of us, and we were supposed to follow along. And we thought this was the most possible boring thing. I mean, it's so boring, because his voice was so low. I'm not even joking. It was so low, and oh, God. Now it seems like he's pretty religious, but then it just sounded like, what in the world? And we thought, this is so boring, and we had to stand up when we were doing it, because when you pray, you're supposed to stand up. And so my sister and I would just, like, die. We cannot stand up this long. We cannot be quiet this long. We cannot not move this long. You know, we had super acedia, you know, or ADD, I'm not sure which is which, but we couldn't do it. And I couldn't wait for something else to happen. This is what it's like. This is acedia. I really wanted this thing to get over with. I couldn't stand paying attention that long. I couldn't stand being quiet that long. You know, it was horrible. I couldn't stand being obedient that long and just standing up when someone else was telling me what to do that long. I couldn't get with somebody else that long. It was bringing out all my really deep set problems, and I wasn't facing them. I wanted to dance around, and my sister and I made any number of funny things to say about this man while he was praying. Little sinners that we were, you know, we were very inventive, and we can still mimic him when we're on the phone, which we do. I have to admit, we're all very honest here, right? Okay. But boredom is like the fear of running out of things to do, you know, like when you're a kid and you're facing a long summer, you know, you're saying, do I have enough to do? Am I going to be okay here? Because if I don't have enough to do, I'm going to just be in my own present and it might never end. Boredom has to do with time. And so we can't really say that our pets are bored. They sometimes look like they're bored, but they don't have a real reference to time. They get to, like my cat really can just be in her own space. She's timeless like that. And I think that's a good trait, because boredom is being painfully aware of time passing, and it's not being, and not being filled. And prayer is likely to seem boring like that until it becomes something else. It's what Jude was talking about in the Bible. This is my only Bible part. He's talking, you know where Jude is, right? End of the New Testament. One page, you're going to miss it. Most of it is some incomprehensible diatribe against people who are bad. But then he gets to talk about what you do with these people, and he starts talking about praying. And this part is worth the read every time. So somebody read out his one little instruction about prayer. So he's kind of accusing you. You know, you could be among the scoffers following ungodly desires and never get through boredom into reality. You could be like those scoffers he's naming. Or you could think that something's really going to happen if you pray. And if you keep praying and keep yourself in God's love, he's talking about, if you actually wait, then you might get beyond it and find out what actually all these people have been talking about for the last 2,000 years when they're praying. It actually, that so much is happening and that maybe you didn't even know about. So what if you actually know what I'm talking about? I'm going to go to the practical part. So if you don't know what I'm talking about yet, I'm sorry. You know, but it's all right. Read Kathleen Norris's book. She spends 200 pages on it. It'll give you more time to think about it. But if you do know what I'm talking about, if you somehow and you want to fight that kind of mysterious feeling of resistance that you feel when you're praying, if you've ever been to prayer and you feel like you don't want to, or you feel like you don't want to do it as long as you think you ought to, or if you didn't get to that place where you thought you were actually doing it, what do you do? If you don't want to just feel that blech that you feel, and you go and get distracted so you might not feel it as bad, what do you do? There's not one thing to do, but I'm going to tell you like five things to do. Try any of them. Because the main thing about it is trying something. Be prepared. This is just a little primer on prayer. How do you pray? If you want to do this, and try to be disciplined about it. And there's more things to say, but these came to my mind. And I practice all of these, so these are kind of field tested. Be prepared when you pray. If you think you're gonna whip out prayer like you whip out the iPhone, not gonna happen. That's the opposite thing. Prayer doesn't happen the same way as most of modern life. You have to actually practice it. If you're not gonna get to be a hermit out in the middle of nowhere, okay, try something a little in your own zone. Like try praying at the same time every day, so you get yourself in a habit, because you're already in a habit, a million habits. This would be the prayer habit. and you're trying to install it. So try it at the same time. Because if you wait for there to be any time, you know how that's going to work. So schedule it. That'll help. Find a regular prayer space and prepare it. If you live in a, you know, one floor of an apartment, you'll have a corner. That's your prayer corner, or a place that you always go for prayer. The famous story about John Wesley's mother, you may not know John Wesley as famous evangelist. She had like 100,000 children. So when she put her apron over her head, it was prayer time. Don't touch mom. She's praying. There are ways to do this, you know, and so she found that way too. Maybe you can find a favorite chapel, a favorite place outside, like in Julius's garden, and mark the place somehow as sacred. She just needed an apron. Candle. Hopefully you already do this. Candle, something, that's where your Bible is. That's where your iPad is for the Circle of Hope daily prayer, whatever it is that you do. Enter it with some kind of symbolic action, too. I'm fond of doing this. When I get up every day, I actually put on my cross and I wear it. I ripped it up the other day, though. I was ripping it off and I broke it, so I haven't got it on right now. But and it's helpful that if you don't have to be, if it's not distracting to you, you might, you know, some people like to light their incense, holy smoke. You know, the music might help you. Maybe you're musical. Sometimes that's just another distraction, though. So that's not always helpful. But be prepared. Prepare the space. Be honest when you're praying. Am I being honest when I pray? If your prayer is not connected to your real life, not to your to your true feelings, then boredom and dryness is going to naturally result from that disconnect. If you have a life that's Christian here and not Christian there, and the not Christian places where you're supposed to pray, it's going to be trouble. So that just be aware that that does not a big help. Did you see the movie A Good Day to Die? Of course you didn't. Bruce Willis. I have to watch all these for some reason. We went through the whole movie, and later in the evening, I was reflecting on it, which was kind of fruitless. But I always reflect on the movies I just saw. I said, "Can I remember the plot?" How often I can't as soon as I walk out. But I was talking to Gwen about it. She said, "Would you please stop it? You can't reflect on that movie because there was nothing there. You can't do that. You know, and if you're in your prayer and you're not honest about yourself and you're not in your own reality, you can be reflecting upon nothing, which can really ruin you. You know, you might have to push through that nothingness that you bring into prayer so that you can actually get somewhere. It takes being attentive to God. You have to be honest about this. Where am I in my soul? What's happening in my body? What's really happening in my mind?" That's why prayer is so hard, because it actually is something. If you're unreflective, you're basically just becoming more of a good day to die all the time. Or moving into oblivion, my most recent favorite piece of fluff. Maybe you want to let loose of the practice of prayer. Look at this one. Now we're talking about practice. Prayer is mainly just about talking with God. Don't control it. Let it go. Don't work too hard. It sounds weird. I'm giving this whole instruction about prayer, and it sounds like you should work really hard at it. If you did all of these, that sounds like hard work, Rod. What are you talking about? If you're working too hard on it, like you can do it right, like you're in charge of it, like you can strangle it into feeling better, probably not. You're waiting for God. You're listening to God. You're trying to, you might be trying too hard. These are just suggestions about what you might want to try to help you not control it so hard. Do something else. Walk around when you pray. Maybe you never did that before. Walk around the neighborhood and pray. Maybe you should write out your prayer. Can you see those over there? I don't really want to say them all. But you could ask a friend to pray with you. You could call them up on the phone. Let's pray together. Did you ever do anything like this? Read the list. You know, if you haven't ever done any of these things, get in the game. Let's do it. Let's play, you know, because these things help. These things are really helpful. And if you don't do odd things that you've never done before, like read Circle of Hope daily prayer, this is so easy and it's so good every day. You know, and do the suggestions. There's suggestions every day. You know, if you went through all of Circle of Hope daily prayer, you got to the suggestions and you never do one, you have acedia. you know, that resistance. Why would you ever get a suggestion from one of your brothers and sisters and not do it? Why would you do that? If you didn't have this just strange, enervating distraction that keeps you bound up in some kind of weird spiritual slavery, why would you just get over yourself and do it? Try it. Why wouldn't you? It's just bizarre, really. It's strange. Why wouldn't you go to Circle of Hope Daily Prayer? I'm not trying to make you feel guilty. I'm just trying to say, why? Have you ever asked that question? Why do I do things like that? Why am I resisting? We're working with acedia. It's a real syndrome. It's a real thing. You have to push through it so you can get to it. As far as letting go, you might let go of some of your practices. You might want to let go of God, too. Because you might have a strange idea about God that's causing you to be kind of resistant as well. You might have some unusual or unhelpful images of God. Some of you who grew up in evangelicalism think that prayer should be, or Pentecostal. I am a Pentecostal right now, but it was like a straight-on one for quite a while. And so every time you were praying, you were supposed to have like a spiritual orgasm. You know, and if you didn't, it was like you were having sex with God and you didn't have an orgasm. And now you feel really guilty and like you should fake your orgasm. You know, and then when you start doing stuff like that, you have a really bad sexual relationship and you're not honest about how it's really working for you. You know? But people expect that, and once they don't get it, now I don't want to have sex, I don't want to pray at all. And it's like that. So you might want to give that up because it's different than that. You're talking to God. We're not talking about your feelings like are the central factor of this. Right. We're trying to get to know God as God actually is, and that may take a little more than what you last thought of, right? You might actually have dramatic moments in prayer in your background. Like, remember that time when I was 25 and it really happened, or 21, that's when they often happen. You know, and this miraculous thing happened, and that's why I became a Christian, and nothing's happened ever since. And you think, wow, I must just be, I'm like 35 now, this is really sucks, you know, because why I never got back there. It's like I had my opportunity, maybe I missed it, and now I'm just a loser, you know. But you had to move into the next thing. You have to keep moving here with God. It's a bigger operation, and so you might have to get through that resistance that developed for any number of reasons. Somebody read Psalm 4 there. This is one of the places the Bible talks about this. Like now, this is going too long. Go ahead and read it. Can you see it?
Complain if you must, but don't lash out. Keep your mouth shut and let your heart do the talking. Build your case before God and wait for his verdict. Why is everyone hungry for more? More, more, they say. More, more. I have God's more than enough. More joy in one ordinary day than they get in all their shopping sprees. At day's end, I'm ready for sound sleep. For you, God, have put my life back together.
One of the things I get from that, and there's a lot of things to get from that little piece, but in terms of the relating to God, that I often have to remember that God is doing something when I don't even know about it. The same way God was doing something for me before I even knew him. It's just a basic Christian thought that we all should have. You know, that I didn't save myself. God had that, was working on that as soon as I was born, before I was born. Working on my poor parents, trying to get them to go get a donut and drop him off at church with Dr. Harms. Who knows? I don't know how it all worked out, but it did. And when I'm asleep, God's still working on me. God's still working for me. There's a whole thing that when I wake up, something better can be happening right now. That's a good view of God that allows you kind of to get through that kind of, I got to do this all right, I got to do this by myself, I've got to push through all this by myself and make this all happen, I'm a bad person, and that whole thing that we get into that makes us not want to pray. One last thing, tell your story about it. If you want to push through, let's keep talking about it, because community really counts. We can't do this by ourselves. And if we want to do something that's a little difficult for us, it's good. It's good that you were at the meeting tonight. And I hate to say this, but I'm okay if you got really bored by my speech, too, because it was my whole point. You know, if you can't get through a little speech like this, this is really quite brief. You know, Paul, like, spoke for all night, you know. People were falling out of windows because they were falling asleep. You know, and they I mean, I... I won't go over the whole thing about how other people in the world deal with this, but a lot of people actually like to get the stuff and get all of it, and they're really anxious. But in the United States, we are filled with acedia. And the whole culture is teaching us how to get more of it. And so when we talk about something with each other that is not that, and we say, let's not do that. How you doing with that? How's your acedia going? Hey, you know, while you're working on that, remember what Rod said? I couldn't understand exactly what he was saying, but I think this is what he was talking about. Like how bored you are right now with me. You know, like you didn't even wait till I was finished with my sentence before you were looking at somebody else. Like you were actually went out to dinner with me and you looked at your phone while I was doing this. Like what you talked about the whole time was yourself and you couldn't even connect. You know, all those kinds of things because you never developed anything but just like the smoky heart. You know, you don't got anything here. You're going to go pray or what? Let's do this thing. You know, let's get frustrated. That would be great. And you know, the community is good for that because we're forming something that we have a lot of opposition. Mark Zuckerberg is against us. He's like rich, you know? I mean, that's amazing. I mean, we know more about Facebook than we know about Jude. I'm just saying, you know, we can do that with each other. The other day when I was in Love Park trying to create some missional space, I was kind of glad. I didn't know how my cell phone worked in any number of ways. It rang, and I had to talk to my realtor, and I was talking to somebody. My phone rang, and I talked to my realtor instead of talking to the person I was going. Said, "I got to take this," as we always do. And I walked off by myself into the middle of Love Park and was doing this thing that we do instead of actually being in my moment with the person I was actually with. And I realized, oh, I'm doing that thing. That's the kind of thing I'm going to talk about this week. I need to note that and not just wipe it out and say, okay, well, whatever. I have to go up against the resistance. So I tried to, and these other people were taking pictures of the Love Park statue thing, the love thing, which is what they do all the time when you're there. And so this one lady was trying to get a picture of herself. She's wearing a headscarf. She's trying to get her thing to line up right. So I went up to her, kind of violating a few boundaries, and said, "Can I help you?" And she let me move her hands so that I could get it in the picture right. And we got this little moment of connection. She actually let me touch her, and we got face to face. She was thankful. It was kind of one of those, it was a moment. It was an anti-acedia moment. You know, where I actually pushed through all my resistances, all the things that might make me get distracted, and I actually tried to be actually where I was in my own time. God was helping me. I had a lot of prayer build up to get there. So I encourage you to try to keep working with that and have that more and more moments with God like that. Thanks for working with me so long on that. I don't know how long that was. It's probably longer than it was supposed to be. But do you want to talk back anyway?